now, the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Hi again, everybody, and welcome on in. John Wilner is going to be with us today. Wilner Hotline, as always, with John. Now that the college football playoff is behind us, I gave him a couple of days to breathe. There's been this negative side about the ratings for the CFP, what changes are going to come to the CFP, what about the offseason for Kenny Dillingham, Brent Brennan. A lot to get to. We will chop it up with John Wilner shortly. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always and through the years, that's Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. I'm actually emceeing an event, co-emceeing an event for Desert Financial tonight for academics. They are a big part of the community. On my mind today is, I guess Jimmy Butler is what people locally are talking about. And in my circles, the Miami Heat and the Suns and the Jazz all being tied together in making this deal happen for Jimmy Butler, if in fact it is meant to be. I'm with Pat Riley on this. You've been following the Jimmy Butler saga, soap opera story. The Suns are trying to get a player that is very talented but has decided, you know, I am not going to get on the team plane. I am going to go tell the president of the team that he's no good. I'm going to do whatever I can do. I'm going to wear purple and orange shoes because I want to get out of Miami so badly. And, of course, me being me looks at that type of behavior and says, I don't want that on my team. But, hey, he could win games for us. You know what? So could Bradley Beal, and he hasn't. People get all excited about what's next, what's next, what's next. And this is a bigger conversation about where Matt Ishbia is as an owner. It's one thing to have your business in the mortgage industry be destroying the competition. It's great. The NBA, you could go out and you could trade Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson for Kevin Durant, and the window is closing. And I thought Devin Booker was interesting last night in the post-game interview on the Suns. He brought up how big it was that the Suns didn't have to have Kevin Durant on the floor in the fourth quarter to conserve his minutes. That's where we are. And that's what it's going to be in the playoffs. They'll make the playoffs. They'll turn the corner a little bit. This is the time of year where trade deadline, all-star game, and then they start seeing the finish line, and all of a sudden I have a pulled groin, I have to miss five games, I have a this, I have a that, which is what the NBA has become, starts to settle in. You look at this, and I just don't see how bringing Jimmy Butler here is suddenly going to be magical for Kevin Durant. We are rolling on this, so I could be dead flat wrong. I think this is a bigger conversation about the owner. Do we have an owner here who does not have patience? We love having an owner who's just going to go out and do everything in their power to win. Unfortunately, what I've seen through the years in those owners is they don't do the right things. They just keep chasing and chasing. And sometimes you just got to let a team settle. Or sometimes you have to press reset. You can go get a whole bunch of first round picks as draft capital, but you're going to trade them for a guy that's not happy, Jimmy Butler? Maybe you need to tear this whole thing down and start over. Or it's, hey, the window for Kevin Durant is here, and I as an owner cannot handle having a team that doesn't win. Guess what? If you're going to be in the long game for pro sports, you're going to go through that. You look at franchises, model franchises, and you could be in the NFL, it could be in Major League Baseball, big markets, small markets. I credit what Ken Kendrick is doing. We're considered a small market, and he's got as good a pitching staff as you would want, and he's balanced the numbers. Have they made mistakes and chased the wrong guy? Absolutely. Anybody who says Madison Bumgarner was a great move, yeah, sure. Zach Greinke, I mean, come on. Big names, gave you some, didn't give you much of anything. Big contracts, got out from under them, and at least they were trying to win. You look at where the Diamondbacks are now, they bottomed out. Bottomed out in a big way. And rather than blowing everybody out, there was patience. So I'm looking at it and saying, just be patient. Just be patient. Is Jimmy Butler really the answer? Is Jimmy Butler really the answer? That's on my mind. Up next, John Wilner. We will talk all things college football around the CFP and more. This is Brad Sussmat on Sports360AZ.com. And now, because the championship game is behind us, John Wilner knows all, tells all. He's going to explain why 22 million viewers is bad, because all I've been reading and hearing about for the national championship game. Of course, you can read John's content on the website. John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, nationally syndicated columnist, joins us every week. All right, so the title game gets played. Great game, I thought. We'll get into the whole CFP overall, but let's just start with the number 22 million and why that's bad.
Well, it's good under the circumstances. The problem is the circumstances. I would argue that on a Monday, 10 days after the semifinals, and in between the semifinals and finals, two rounds of NFL playoffs, and it's a holiday, and it's the inauguration, and it's ESPN and not over the air, mm-hmm. 22 million is a decent number.
Great.
Pretty good.
A great number, John.
Great number. Okay, we'll go great. I'll give you a great. The issue is that it could be much better. It could be much better if it was on ABC and not ESPN.
Okay.
For sure. I think it would be a lot better if it was moved up. Fans, it's hard for fans, the mainstream fans, to stay engaged with college football when you've got 10 days and two rounds of NFL playoffs between the semifinals and the championships. It's later than it's ever been. The game last year, Washington-Michigan, drew about 25 million. That was on January 8th. So we're you know, 10, 12 days later? I think that's a problem. It took 30 days from the first playoff game to the last playoff game. Too long. They need to move it all back up. Ideally, college football ends its has its championship game in the Rose Bowl January 1st, right? That'd be the best. I don't know that we'll ever get to that point because there's so much that goes into it. But they need to, they could do much better if they move it up and get it on over the air for sure. Get it on a broadcast network.
Okay. So the streaming numbers aren't added, right?
Right.
And so you kind of have to tilt your head and say, I don't know, guys, we're in 2025. You might want to factor in streaming.
Yeah.
But I don't see that anywhere, and not that it would make – it could make a huge difference. It's just not being factored in.
No, that's true. But so also the thing is, it's Notre Dame and Ohio State, massive fan bases, huge sure. national appeal.
Sure.
I mean, and both those – Notre Dame hadn't played for the championship in decades. Ohio State's been 10 years. I think a lot of people were expecting 25 to 30 million.
No, but there are people, I think there are people in our industry that may not be educated, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Media.
There's a lot of nuance that goes into those, the audience numbers.
Sure, sure. John Wilner with us for a few minutes. Okay, so let's go off of that. If you're commissioner, if I'm commissioner, I'll just go down that path. This isn't that hard. August is fake football in the NFL. It's the worst product of all sports. It's even worse than the Pro Bowl in the NFL. It's just the worst of the worst. So if you started the college football season the third week in August, okay, you're going to finish in November, right? You're going to then put up those 10 days. This isn't that hard, John. This isn't brain surgery. You just move the calendar up a little bit because the big bad NFL, and that's who they are, they're always going to be chasing others that want to get in on their property. And so rather than sit there and say it's the big bad NFL, the NFL product, by the way, is not great. And their numbers are down. But that's not a big narrative. That doesn't produce all the clicks that everybody wants in our industry. So they want to protect what's being put on their table. And I think college football needs to do the same. I'm not sitting here as a honk for it. You're not a honk for it. You love it. I love it. I just feel like, you know, so what? So what if the NFL does this or does that? Their product isn't that great. There's no bands on the field. There's no alumni. There's none of that stuff. In some weeks, the product is beyond dog food. So there.
Well, how do you really feel, Brett? What?
Yeah, so there. There's where I'm at on this whole, let's just try to tamp down again and say, look at us. Yeah, that's why you guys are expanding around the globe, because you realize that here in the United States, people are starting to look at your product and say, yeah, peace out. I don't really need it.
Well, the other thing that's going to happen with the NFL is they're going to add an 18th game, whether it's in 3 years or five. And that 18th game is going to add another week to the regular season in January, further crowding that month for college football's playoff. So basically, college football needs to find 2 weeks to move. If they want to move that championship game up into early January, they got to come up with 2 weeks. So you could start the whole thing 2 weeks earlier, August 20th or so.
Sure.
Or you could start it on what is now week zero, say August 27th, the Saturday before Labor Day weekend. And so you could start move it up 1 week to late August and get rid of conference championships. That's a way to find 2 weeks. I don't know that any conference really is beholden to its championship game except for the SEC, whose game does huge ratings and generates a massive amount of money. That would be the obstacle. But if you move the season up 1 week and you get rid of conference championships, there's your 2 weeks. That way, the second week of December, you could start the playoffs instead of the third. I don't know that we're going to ever get there. I don't think that they will move it. Your suggestion is a good one. The issue, though, is if you start the season, say, August 20th, then you've got to start training camp even earlier, middle of July. I don't think anybody in college sports wants that to happen for a bunch of reasons, including the coaches' personal schedules, the requirement for the athletes. That's the problem, is getting the right amount of training camp time in before you start the season.
But, John, I would say to you that I'm sorry, head coach, your golf schedule's messed up.
Well.
You know, and look, family time for college coaches is a whole column in its own right, as crazy as December has become. But it appears, I'm transitioning here, it appears, John, that cooler heads are starting to prevail and say, you know what, it is pretty dumb that we have the portal opening and December is a mess and we're trying to get ready for bowl games. There's been some movement on that front, right?
Some, a little, a teeny bit. The coaches proposed one transfer window. I don't know that that's ever going to happen, because we've seen with multiple rulings in court, if you take away rights to athletes that have been granted, you're going to get sued and you're going to lose. Right now, they got a transfer window in the winter after the regular season, and they got a transfer window in the spring. If you try to limit that, I think they're going to have a problem in court. The other complicating factor with the transfer window is kids have to be able to enroll at their new schools in January. So you've got to give them a time in late December, early January to move for academic purposes. Again, academics getting in the way of big business of college sports, but that's the constant yin yang that college football faces, right? I mean, it's higher education and big business colliding. Usually big business wins, but in the case of enrolling for a semester, that's a pretty big deal.
You know, I guess I look at it and say a lot of these kids know where they're going to go. You know,
yeah.
I'll use Devin Brown as an example, quarterback Ohio State. Right after the champ game, he goes to Cal. It's not like they just called that night and said, hey,
right.
You know, they had it figured out. And they're really, if we're going to go brass tacks on this, 98% of those kids are not the high end. It's the 2% that everybody's already pursuing through the agent. The agent's going to have it all laid out for them. So, you know, do I need to have a transfer portal window the first part of December? No. I understand what you're saying legally, but I guess I look at it and say there's other ways to build a portal without being restrictive, without ending up in court.
There might be. The question is whether the NCAA in all its subcommittees upon subcommittees, and you know, everybody's got a different view. You got Alabama and South Alabama all the same, right? Yeah. That's a big problem. It all points towards the power conferences taking more control of their own rules, and the transfer portal player movement is certainly part of that. I think we're moving quickly to the era where football breaks away and the big conferences basically can dictate everything, including issues that seep into higher education, like enrollment for semesters. But again, everything the NCAA does is either because it's been ordered by a court or because they're afraid of getting sued, right? So you have to start. That's kind of the starting block when you're evaluating any issue.
Okay, so you're the commissioner of the SEC, and you walk in and you look at the champ game, and your teams weren't in it.
Yeah.
What are you going to try to do to make sure that your teams get in it? What are we going to see here in the next, I don't know, 6-8 months that comes out that the SEC has decided to do X, Y, or Z to favor their position? Because it's going to happen, John. It's going to happen.
So, and as with everything else, a little bit complicated. In order to make a change to the playoff for next season, all 10 conferences have got to agree. There's got to be unanimity. But starting with the 2026 season, the SEC and Big Ten can kind of dictate terms. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to see a big change in terms of automatic bids for next year. Because the Big Ten, the Big 12, the ACC, and the Group of Five have no reason to agree to terms that would benefit the SEC or Big Ten. But starting in 2026, probably what you're going to get is automatic bids.
Okay.
I mean, all automatic bids. So let's say it's a 12-team playoff. SEC starts every season with three bids. Big Ten starts every season with three big bids. ACC, one. Big 12, one. Group of Five, one. And maybe there's one or two at-larges. I don't know how they'd make the math work exactly, but that's what we're going to see starting in 2026 is the SEC and Big Ten with three or four automatic bids before they play the first game. That will ensure the access that they want.
How does that impact bowls?
I don't know that it really impacts bowls that much. Viewership for bowl games was through the roof. ABC set an 11-year high for the bowl games on that network. Across all of ESPN, I think year over year, bowl viewership was up like 11, 14%. So I think the playoff helped generate interest in the sport that translated to people watching bowl games. There's going to be more bowl games, Brad, not fewer in the future, because supply demand is showing ESPN it's worthwhile. I mean, bowl game viewership trounces the NBA games on ESPN. Why wouldn't they add five more? I think we're going to see that. So bowls are actually in a pretty good spot, regardless of the fact that so many people were kind of poo-pooing or bemoaning the state of the bowl system when the playoff got expanded. It's actually helping the bowls.
Yeah, I am one of those that is not big on.
No, I'm sure you're not, but you got to get ready. There's going to be a bowl
game.
Three
of them in this state, John.
Get ready for the Yuma Bowl, Brad. It's coming.
Like Havasu Bowl.
Life.
We'll play under the London Bridge in Lake Havasu. Before I get you out of here, let's just go through some things that are within the state of Arizona. And one of those is the Fiesta Bowl. So yep. The Fiesta Bowl gets passed over yet again for a national championship game. It was announced this last weekend, a new site. And so when you look at where the bowl games have been and why there hasn't been a championship game in Arizona, even though they're part of this CFP or they're part of the BCS or they're part of all these things, John. We haven't had a champ game here now. We're coming up on 16 years. So politically, what is going on behind the scenes where the Fiesta Bowl, even though they're viewed as one of the big games, keeps getting passed over? Somebody somewhere is saying, we're not going to do that. Yeah, they get a semifinal next year, but I'm kind of pissed, to be honest with you, about how Phoenix keeps getting passed over, even though supposedly they're one of the biggest ones. You and I sat together last May, or April was, and I asked directly to the people of the CFP, why is Phoenix get passed over? And I got a non-answer. What's going on, John?
I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. It is a closely held secret.
Sure.
Why they are doing this. They clearly are favoring the Southeastern quadrant, right? I mean, I don't know. I honestly, it's a mystery to me as well. You'd think that they've got everything they need in Phoenix with the stadium, right. Hotels, airport access. I wonder if
Final
it's more.
Fours, John, Final Fours come here. Women's yes. Final Fours here next year. We have Super Bowls in here.
I know.
But something politically, this is my theory. It's not even Grassy Knoll theory. It's just theory that somebody somewhere, maybe it was during the Junker regime,
yeah.
somebody behind the scenes says, we will never, ever give a championship game back to Phoenix.
Makes as much sense as anything, to be honest with you. Because I don't know. Nothing. None of the material indicators of what makes a good championship site are exclusive of Phoenix. I mean, it's got what you'd want, right? The one thing it doesn't have is easy access for the heart of college football, which is in the Southeast.
Right.
But that shouldn't be, I mean, 16 years, it's too much. I don't get it.
There's a story there somewhere. All right.
There is, absolutely.
You have got a coach on the hot seat. You wrote about it this week. If we're talking coaches on the hot seat, and it used to be you could just pencil ASU in there for the last 15 years, which was kind of easy, right?
Yeah.
But Coach Brennan, you've got him on the hot seat. Atop the list, John, for next year.
Anytime the athletic director has to issue a statement of support, you know the coach is on the hot seat. And the fact is it happened after Brent Brennan's 12th game, right? It was such a bad season that people thought he might get fired and the school had to respond. I think that if they don't make a bowl game next year, there's a good chance he's going to get dismissed, as hard as that is to imagine. But so many things went so wrong for them. Plus, he's working for an athletic director who didn't hire him. Desiree Reed Francois was hired, 2 months after Brennan was hired? And the president who hired him is gone. So that's a big factor. Attendance cratered. That you just watched them play and you thought they don't know what they're doing. That strategically, they didn't know what they were doing. His coaching staff was a mess. Now, to his credit, he's made some changes. I think he's upgraded his staff tremendously. Danny Gonzalez is a very good pick for defensive coordinator. I think Seth Nagy has a good chance to be an impact play caller on the offensive side. They've got Noah Fifita back. I think there's a chance. Brennan's doing everything right now. The problem is he did a lot of things wrong those first 12 months, and they just cratered.
Yeah.
And, you know, in this day and age, you can't be uncompetitive, non-competitive for multiple seasons. Football means too much to the rest of your athletic department. If he doesn't win next year, and I don't think he's got to win 9 or 10 games, I think if he can get him to a bowl, that'll be enough improvement for him to return for year 3.
All right. Final question. So the Big 12 has announced that their media days are going to be in Dallas. Am I going to see you there? Do you think?
You probably will see me there. Yeah. It's early. I want to say it's like the 8th or 9th. Yeah. I mean, I'm planning on it. I got to see when everything else is breaking. When is the Big 10?
You're an elitist.
West slash
you want to big
what the
10,
what the calendar is?
Important.
I am planning to go. Absolutely, I am planning to go.
Will you put Arizona State, fact or fiction, true or false? Will you put Arizona State last on your preseason Big 12 media day?
Just for old time's sake.
Just for old time's sake, right?
I released my early top 25 for next season.
All that.
Yeah, and I've got ASU right about 15th. But I don't know that I'm going to pick ASU to win the Big 12.
Oh, come on.
They caught magic that it's hard to retain a second year.
Wow.
Expectations are higher. I think internal dynamics might change. You know, and the Big 12 is, you know, you can move up and down quickly in the Big 12 because there's no blue bloods blocking your way. I think ASU, you know, will be a top 3 or 4 team in the Big 12, but I'm not going to pick them. I don't think I'm going to pick them at this point to win the conference. It's harder to stay at the top than it is to get there.
Yeah, but you and I are probably on the same line on this. I haven't seen the schedule come out yet. That's like any day now, right? And once the schedule comes out, I can kind of look
next week, I think.
I know September 5th, they play at Mississippi State.
Yep.
And they open against NAU. Okay. So that's a pretty favorable first couple of weeks, you would think. So from there, who knows? But
Well, the thing is, the Big 12, everything flips with the transfer portal
yes.
and the parity in the Big 12. we went into last season thinking that Arizona and Utah were going to be the best Pac-12 teams in the Big 12. And it turned out to be ASU and Colorado. We have no idea what to expect, but it's going to be hard for ASU to stay at the top. Everything changes when you have success.
Yes.
Everything changes. And I think Kenny Dillingham is the right guy for the job and the right guy to manage it. But the difference between winning the Big 12 and finishing fourth is on the margin. It's like three plays a season. And to get all those plays to go right a second time is hard.
Oh, I agree with you on that. That's one of the few things we did agree on today.
Yes, so, for sure.
Let you go off that. Appreciate you as always. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Brett.
There's the great John Wilner. We're back with more after this timeout.